3, 4, 5, 6, and test. She used to take the little boy for long walks from Telegraph Hill all the way down to Market Street and back, and certainly gave him a good start as far as muscular and skeletal development was concerned. She was a marvelous cook, and on occasion would prepare some delightful Russian dish, which was added to our supper. But on occasions when my then wife would be away, she went all out and would cook for me a complete Russian dinner, all the way from the marvelous red borscht soup through the cabbage rolls and into some very special dessert period. After not too long a time, unfortunately, the issue of the exercise program for the little boy reached a bit of a climax, and Mrs. Denyakin took a dignified departure period. If I'm not greatly mistaken, however, the little boy was Elmo III, and I understand his magnificent physical development in terms of Mrs. Denyakin's exercise program, if not in terms as well of some of that marvelous dietary pattern period. She was a very interesting woman. When I knew her, she was a widow, period. Apparently, she and her husband had escaped from Russia and made the long trek into China, and again, I believe, Shanghai, where they settled down, but apparently were trapped by immigration laws just before they could complete their hoped-for journey to the United States. If I remember correctly, her husband had been a Russian military officer and went into the Chinese Coast Guard in an officer status after their arrival in China. She told one story I've never forgotten. Apparently he was a bit of a stickler for things, and she described how he'd arranged to have a flagpole at the station painted white, but had registered keen disappointment when, since the paint dried slowly, it turned into a sort of a mottled gray because of the number of insects which became stuck to the fresh paint. We had occasional long talks, and I remember one thing that she said that impressed me very much at that time. Several things. The first one was that she had relatives in Dayton, Ohio, and she marveled that she could travel from San Francisco all the way to Ohio and back without being challenged and required to show any kind of a visa or passport while crossing the boundary of so many different states, period. The other thing that impressed her was our tax system. She said, "Dr. Zumwalt, do you pay a tax when you earn money?" And I said, "That is true, Mrs. Yanyak." And she said, "Then when you buy something, you pay a tax to buy it." And I said, "Yes, that's also true." And I said, "Oh, in addition to that, we pay a certain number of taxes and things of that sort when we use certain things, period." She found that a source of some wonderment, but not a real, not a genuine complaint. In some fashion, I believe that she ultimately went back to Dayton to live, but that is merely perhaps conjecture. New paragraph. "There's living here in San Francisco a perfectly marvelous human being, a sister in holy orders who was the head lady here at what we call Lone Mountain, a Catholic recent years, the administration there changed greatly. Did the teaching staff, and she and three of her associates are now living outside the order and doing community work here in the city, period. They apparently survive on a dispensation of about $400 a month for the four of them, plus what they earn in various things that they do, period. This particular lady is working as an assistant in our city attorney's office and was attached to the retirement system where I work for a good number of years. We had long visits together, and over coffee in the staff room at the hospital. And at the first of these occasions, we got into the usual thing of whom we knew among our acquaintances, and having uncovered about a dozen such, why, she said, "You know, Dr. Zumwalt, I believe there are only 10 people living in San Francisco, and they all know one another, period." That should be exclamation point. The fact that Mrs. Dinyakin apparently occupied a niche in the lives of you and me so long ago and in such a distant place illustrates her point on a somewhat global basis, period. New paragraph. Another little incident comes to mind. Late during World War II, while at sea, for some reason or other, I had occasion to sit down with a pay clerk on our ship, and he had the register, I guess, of all of the officers in the Navy. He's looking up something in relation to myself, and he sat back with a bit of surprise and looked up at me, and he said, "You know, Doctor, there are two of you." And I said, "Oh, really?" And he said, "Yes, there's a... Look here." And he showed me your listing right next to mine, period. His wonderment, I think, was on the basis that we had a rather uncommon name, but it may have been also on the basis that it's a question in his mind whether the Naval Service could accommodate two people named Zumwalt at the same time, period. In any event, that was the first time at which I became aware of your existence, although I had had many passengers on our ship describe your father to me in glowing terms, he having, I guess, been sort of an indoctrination officer as well as a surgeon at Camp Lewis. It always bothered me during the ensuing years that our families had become somewhat estranged. About 70 years before, and there was so little contact between all of us, period. One of the happy things now for me is to enjoy a feeling that between the two of us we have somehow or other eliminated that breach, period. I have no idea what occasioned it. Apparently, on some unremembered event during those desperate days when my grandmother, a widow, was trying to get along, a certain coolness developed, which I can understand since she was a very proud woman, and apparently our branch of the family had and hit a sort of a nadir, N-A-D-I-R, in their affairs. It may have simply been that your folks moved down to Larry at that time. As I've often said, I think your grandfather, looking around the sycamore, said, "This place is getting entirely too soggy. I'm going to head south where rivers don't play quite such mean tricks in wintertime. A new paragraph. I'm sure that you remember the wonderful luncheon that was given you at the Fairmont Hotel some years back, and everyone in attendance was introduced, and apparently the excuse for my presence was that I was supposed to represent a segment of the family. And across the room, my good friend Dick Peterson got up and was introduced as a cousin of yours as well. And he and I looked across the room because we'd become well acquainted over the years. And as we left together, we had a little joke. He said, well, hello, cousin. And it's kind of a little thing that we enjoyed as the years went by. My sweet wife has just got up and turned on the heat radiator out in the hall, and I think she's on her way in to make some coffee, Elmo. And she's wearing a very nice Japanese kimono, so that when she comes in, I'll give her my usual greeting when she wears that kimono, saying to her in general terms, very pretty American geisha girl. And then she always gets a very sweet smile. You know, it's such a tragic thing. She can no longer speak, but she understands every word perfectly, and her sense of humor is completely unimpaired. I also have a little joke with her about that, because she likes Ralph Bowman, my weekday helper, very much. And she seems to wear that kimono the morning that she's here, and on the weekends, when another chap takes his place, she appears in a nice bathrobe. But it isn't quite as glamorous as that, as this kimono. So I tease her a little bit about that, too. Actually, he's been a tremendous help, because at times when my stepson is here, he's able to take her out to little shopping tours and other things. And this helps a great deal in eliminating a certain element of cultural deprivation, which affects her since she can no longer drive a car or speak for herself. She goes about. Very fortunately, we've lived in this neighborhood for a decade and a half, and the shopkeepers and bank clerks and people around here are very kind to her, and she's able to go out on her own in the immediate neighborhood, and even on occasion has gone downtown directly to Union Square on a very good bus service we have, and purchase some little thing at one of the fine stores. She always returns from these jaunts with a special happy little look on her face. New paragraph. Difficult as these times are for both of us in certain ways, things have happened that we wish had not. There are bright moments and little joys that fill in some of the gaps, and I hope that things of a similar nature help lighten your burden. I guess that's about the end of the thoughts that I have, unless the code wheels click again, and so I'll sign off with a good morning to you, and as usual, the wish that all goes extremely well, and that the good Lord continue to look over both of us and our families. So I'll say good morning.